Well, let's open the Bible on Mark chapter 5. I have been jumping back and forth a bit in Mark's Gospel, following the liturgical calendar, and because I wanted to preach on this morning. Chapter 5 of Mark's Gospel, verse 21. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, he's back in sort of Jewish territory now, a large crowd gathered round him while he was by the lake. Then, one of the synagogue leaders, named Jairus, came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed round him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. And when she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, "If I just touch his clothes, I will be healed." Immediately, her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once, Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "Oh, you see the people crowding against you," his disciple answers, "and yet you can ask, who touched me?" Jesus could be quite frustrating at times. "Don't be silly," the disciples say, kind of more modern translation. "Don't be silly." But Jesus kept looking around to see who'd done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." And while Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, "Don't be afraid. Just believe." He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. And when they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said, "Talitha cum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately, the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this, and told them to give her something to eat. How you keep that quiet, I have no idea. So this morning, I wanted to preach on this morning, because we are going to have a time of prayer and ministry when I finish. Should I reach out to Jesus for his help? Now that sounds like a rhetorical question, doesn't it? Should I reach out to Jesus for his help? But it isn't a rhetorical question, because people are sometimes reluctant to reach out and ask for Jesus to touch them. And I think this is Mark's question to us in the text. I think Mark is saying to us, whoever you are, you need to reach out and touch Jesus, because Jesus is the Son of God. It kind of brings up the question, at what point do I call for help? At what point do I admit that I'm depressed and I need a counsellor? At what point do I admit that I'm ill and need to see the doctor? Men especially need to pay attention to that. At what point do I admit I'm stuck in my studies and I need to see the tutor? At what point do I admit that I'm confused and I need to talk to the minister? You know, there's a point at which we stop being self-sufficient and say, I need help here. That's true of any area of life. But it's especially true when we bring God into the equation. Because we're reluctant to get God involved. We're reluctant to make the effort to pray. We're reluctant to make the effort to fill in a prayer card to put it on the prayer diary. We're reluctant to put something on Facebook and ask for prayer. We're reluctant to bother people. And if we're going to be honest here, we're reluctant to bother God sometimes, are we not? Am I the only person who's reluctant to bother God sometimes? Some of you say, I know what you're talking about, Peter. Some of you say, I haven't a clue what you're talking about, Peter. That's fine. But those of you who do know what I'm talking about will understand. Now, Mark, the writer of this gospel, he's telling the story of Jesus. I've said it before, I'll say it many, many times. The book of Mark is written like an ancient biography, exactly like it. It's not a mythical story. He's telling a story and bringing in names and bringing in things you can check up on, because that's what the ancients did when they wrote these kind of biographies. But he likes the sandwich stories. You often find, as you read through Mark, he's got two bits of a story and he drops another story in the middle. He likes to do that. He likes to sandwich stories, sometimes with other stories. And this is a wonderful example of that. He's put these two things together. As it happened in real life that way, which is a gift to him. And he doesn't pass it by. Sometimes, you know, God is a last resort. You hear people say, all I've got left is God. Well, that's quite a lot of leftovers, if you don't mind my saying so. And the theme of these stories is touching Jesus. Mark's told us at the beginning of the gospel that Jesus is the Son of God. He's the Messiah, but he is not aloof. He does not stand aloof. He doesn't live in a big palace. He's not protected by five or six PAs who you've got to get through all those jump through all those hoops in order to get to speak to the great man. He's not like that. He is the Son of God. He is the Messiah, but he's the approachable Messiah. He's the Son of God who's close to you. He's not standing aloof. He's not ignoring you. He's not asking for you to make an appointment with his secretary. He's not telling you he can fit you in perhaps February 2017. It's not a waiting list. He doesn't refer you to somebody else. Jesus deals with you himself. He touches you. And in that touch, healing comes. I've got such a simple aim this morning. Forgive me for being so simple. I just want you to reach out and touch Jesus this morning. That's all I want you to do. Whoever you are, whatever's worrying you, whatever's perturbing you, I want you to reach out and touch Jesus this morning. So let's take a look at the first guy, Jairus, and in verses 21 to 22, he's introduced. A large crowd has gathered around Jesus, And people are wanting to hear him, wanting to help them, wanting to give them advice, wanting them to sort out problems. Or just hanging around because they're curious and think something's bound to happen if Jesus is in the vicinity. There's a large crowd. But one of the locally important men pushes through the crowd. His name is Jairus. He's one of the leaders of the local synagogue. And I'm guessing because of that he knew Jesus, because Jesus used to attend the synagogue regularly. Sometimes he used to be given the chance to speak in the synagogues. He tended to cause arguments when that happened, but he did it. And my guess is that Jairus knows Jesus. He's already met Jesus. He's already seen Jesus at work. He's already appreciative of the power that Jesus has as the Son of God and the Messiah. Maybe he hasn't quite come out yet as a follower of Jesus. I don't know. But he knows Jesus. And he's impatient. And he's pushing through the crowd. Excuse me. And they're saying, who are you? Oh, it's Jairus. Sorry, sir. You know. They're stepping aside because he's a minor official in the town. So they're giving him a bit of slack. He gets up to be where Jesus is. He's relatively well off, I expect. He's well respected. He's responsible, capable, strongly religious, and I would imagine a pillar of his community. He's also crazy with fear and anxiety. It's a father-daughter thing. It's his little girl. She's ill and they don't think she's going to survive. It's a father-daughter thing. It's powerful. There's a wonderful Paul Simon song he wrote for his daughter. It moves me to tears every time I listen to it. He sings, there's nothing scary hiding under your bed. I'm going to stand guard like a postcard of a golden retriever and never leave till I leave you with a sweet dream in your head. Come on, Dad. Doesn't that bring a little tear to your eye? Of course it does. Standing guard like a postcard of a golden retriever. It's what dads want to do. Yeah. It's what every dad wants to do. Every dad has it in his heart to protect his little girl. And we know they can twist us around their little fingers, and they know they can twist us around their little fingers, and we don't care. We like that. We enjoy it. It's a father-daughter thing. And he's crazy with grief. He's crazy. He's mad with anxiety and worry. And he pleads in verse 23. Note how Mark just emphasizes this. My little daughter is dying. Please come and touch her. Put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live. That's what he wants. He wants the touch of Jesus in the life of this little girl. And it hasn't been easy. Jesus has been quite difficult to find. He's been on the other side of the lake in the Decapolis, which was the Greek area. I'm actually going to preach on this in a couple of weeks' time and just swap the order around a little bit. He's been difficult to get hold of. You don't know where he's going to go next. He disappears for days, weeks on end. And suddenly, he lands by boat just the moment that Jairus needs him. And Jairus is just thanking God. Jairus feels this is a God moment. You know, this is not a coincidence. This is a God incidence. God has brought Jesus back at the very moment that he needs him. Just as things have got critical, he's been hanging on. They've been calling the doctors. They've been praying. They've been hanging around this little girl. But deeply, he's just wanted Jesus to be there and Jesus to come back. And now here is Jesus. So I'll go through the crowd and I'll persuade him. And there's tremendous faith here, isn't there? There's a faith here. He knows Jesus. He's not reticent in coming forward. He knows where he wants to go. And when he gets the opportunity, he takes it. Come and touch me. touch my daughter. Please, bring your healing touch into our home, into our family. And then we've got the woman. Now, she's anonymous. In verses 25 to 26, we're introduced to her. We don't know her name. I'm guessing she slipped away afterwards, and nobody did find out her name. And Mark didn't get a chance to find out her name, and none of the gospel writers did. She's embarrassed, she slipped away. And whoever she was lost in the crowd and desperately miserable. She was anonymous in the crowd, but desperately miserable. Her infirmity meant that she was not allowed to go to the temple to pray. In fact, she wasn't even allowed in the synagogue. And worse than that, the ritual laws of the time meant that anybody who touched her would have to be ritually cleansed before they went to the synagogue or went to the temple. So she's kind of isolated. She's in the crowd, but she's laying low. She's remaining anonymous. She's keeping herself to herself because she doesn't want to cause problems for other people. She doesn't want to cause embarrassment for herself. And she's not like the leader of the synagogue who knows Jesus. She doesn't know him. But she wants to get close to him. She's marginalized from society. One commentator said that she's as dead socially as the little girl was physically. She's socially isolated. She feels she's got nowhere to turn. But she has a faith. Now, the Jews, I've often mentioned this, and I bore you with it, I know, but because I love this little item. When I discovered it some years ago, I was so thrilled with this little insight. The Jews wore cloaks, and the cloaks had tassels on them. And the tassels became to have a religious significance. They were called tzitzits. And they had religious significance. They demonstrated their faith. Their prayer shawl had tassels on, for example, that kind of reminded them that of the law, that they were people of the law, and that they were God's people. The word for the corner of your cloak was the same word for wings. It's one of these words that has two different meanings. The cloak was also part of your identity. Those of you who know the story of Ruth and Boaz, gosh, it's a long time since I preached about that. I'm missing it. I must be preaching that again sometime. But a wonderful story. Ruth was an immigrant who came to believe in God. She was a widow. And a relative, distant relative, a relative of a dead husband. It was an older man called Boaz. And Boaz fell passionately in love with Ruth. And truth to be told, I think she fancied him quite a lot as well. And she's poor, she's gleaning in a field. She's picking up the leftovers in his field, and he sees her. And his heart goes out to her. He's heard of her faith, and he's seen her now, and she's a good looker as well. And he just so wants this one. But he's a lot older, and he doesn't want to bother her. He doesn't want to pester her. So in the end, she makes the move on him. It's a wonderful story, and maybe word in season to some girls out here, you know. If he's shy, you take the initiative. And she tells him outright that she likes him. And She asks him to spread his wings over her. Spread his wings, spread his cloak over her. The idea, he takes her under his cloak. He takes her under his protection. He takes her into his family. He marries her as his wife. There's a bond there. Your cloak is part of your identity. And so spreading his cloak over her, they're going to become one. They're going to get married. They're going to get hitched, you know? Yeah, got that? And so the cloak was a really important part of your identity, of your religious identity. Your cloak spoke not just of you, but spoke of God. So it's really not a surprise that when one of the Old Testament prophets wrote about the Messiah who is to come, he talked about him having healing in his wings, or healing in his tizit, healing in his cloak. If you look in Malachi chapter 4, it's the only excursion we're going to take out of the book of Mark. In Malachi chapter 4 and verse 2, he talks about the Messiah coming. The Son of Righteousness will rise with healing in its wings. And it says, you will go out and leap like calves released from the stall. You'll be so happy. I'm not a farmer. We have farmers here. And don't think any of our farmers here keep the cows locked up the whole winter. But I have talked to farmers. And it's difficult to keep the calves under control if they've been shut up over winter. And you let them out, they go berserk. And sometimes you've got to hang on to them. They can hurt themselves. So they're that happy. They're that thrill. But the Son of Righteousness, the Messiah, is going to rise with healing in its wings. And the people, as they thought about that, reflected on it in the couple of hundred years when the Messiah didn't turn up. They said, you know, when the Messiah comes, he's going to have healing in the tassels, in the hem of his cloak. So that if you touch the hem of the Messiah's cloak, you'll be healed. That's going to be one of the signs of the Messiah. You can see how it happened. So we go back to Mark. She thinks, if I touch his clothes, I will be healed. You see what's going on here now? I think this guy's the Messiah. I've got the Old Testament promise. There was only one Testament. It didn't have the New Testament yet. I've got the biblical promise. If I touch him, I just get my hand on that hem, he'll heal me. I'll be healed. He's got healing in his wings. He's got healing in the hem, in the tassels of his garment. You've got that? Yeah, that's going on here. And but she's fearful. She's fearful because technically, if she touches him, she'll make him ritually impure. And she doesn't want to do that. You don't want to upset the Messiah. Well, we don't mind because we know how loving Jesus is, but she doesn't know that. So she doesn't want to upset the Messiah. So she decides what she'll do, she'll sneak up on him in the crowd, she just touch it, the hem of his garment and cry out to God to be healed. And it goes according to plan. She touches the hem of his garment and she suddenly realizes she's been healed. She knows in her heart, in her body, deep inside her, she knows she is healed. And it's wonderful. And there's this thrill going through her. And it's great. She slips away anonymously. It's all gone to plan. And then Jesus stops. And he turns around and says, who touched me? And she thinks, loads of people have touched me. I'm just going to keep quiet. I'm not going to say a word. He'll move on. But he doesn't. He doesn't. He just stands still. He will not move. It's like the teacher in the classroom. You know, who said that? Who said that? Which one? Don't know if he put on his teacher mood. But you're not going out to break until you own up kind of thing. Teachers don't do that anymore, do they? Sure they don't. Did in my day. And she realizes that this is not going to work. She's going to have to own up to it. So she comes forward, and the Bible said she is fearful. She's fearful. She's scared of what he's going to say. She's made him unclean. William Barclay, the commentator, says this: when she touched his cloak, it was as if time stood still. It is as if we're looking at a motion picture film, and suddenly the picture stopped and left us looking at one scene. The extraordinary and movingly beautiful thing about this scene is that suddenly, in the midst of the crowd, Jesus stopped, and for the moment it seemed for him that no one but the woman and her need existed. Isn't that beautiful? For a moment, nothing but the woman and her need existed. Can I make a point? You're never lost in the crowd with Jesus. I know people slip into church. Sometimes they like to remain anonymous, and we respect that in Penracht. And if you want to slip in and slip out and don't want to talk to people because that's where you are at the moment, that's fine. This is a safe place to do it. But one thing is true. You're not anonymous in this crowd. Jesus knows where you are. And he knows what's going on. And he's aware of what's stirring your heart. You're never lost in the crowd with Jesus. A long time ago, we used to... This is an old man reminiscing, just put up with it. In the gospel halls, they used to sing this, and in the mission meetings, the hymn was far too emotional to make it into the Baptist hymn book at the time, I'm afraid. Baptists weren't allowed to sing this one. It was too emotional. But I used to love it, still do. It's of its time, I know that. Shackled by a heavy burden, neath a load of guilt and shame, then the hand of Jesus touched me, and now I'm no longer the same. He touched me. Oh, he touched me. And oh, the joy that floods my soul. Something happened, and now I know. He touched me and made me whole. It's not great poetry, and it's maybe a bit over-emotional, and I dare say that for some people it's yuck, but I love it, because it's just that sense, it just so captivates this woman's feeling. I didn't know him. I'd never talked to him, I never met him, but he touched me, and my life has changed. And can I just say, This morning, we're going to invite you to come and join in the prayer time at the front here, if you wish, while the congregation is singing, and that's good. And you might be thinking, well, I'm new to church. I really don't know Jesus that well. And what I'm saying to you is, you don't need to. This woman didn't. But she came and she touched Jesus, and he touched her, and she was healed. You don't need to be a long-standing member of this congregation to come and ask for prayer. It could be your first time in church for a long time. It could be your first time in church ever. And you say, oh, I just got this burden in my heart. Well, come and pray with us, and we'll pray with you. Touch Jesus, and Jesus will touch you. Even if you don't know him that well, reach out and ask him to touch you. And Jairus has been asking for somebody else, of course, has been asking for Jesus to touch him. And that could be what you're going to do this morning. You're going to come to the front and say, look, I'm great, but somebody I love, somebody I'm close to who's not here, just needs the touch of Jesus. Can you pray with me, please? Just, Lord Jesus, just reach out and touch so-and-so. It's a fantastic prayer. Wonderful prayer. It's simple. Oh, but it's good. So, We move on to verse 35. We've seen a woman who's lost in the crowd and desperately miserable. Now we find a girl who's lost in death and desperately mourned. She's only 12 years old. 12-year-old little girl. Interesting. Again, Mark, these things you pick up in the Gospels, you read them. How long had the woman been ill? 12 years. How old is the little girl? 12 years. Mark says, that's an interesting little coincidence, you know. As long as this girl has been alive, that woman was ill. And yet on the same day, they meet the healing touch of Jesus. You know, one miracle has been, both this miracle in a sense, by saying it's been 12 years in the preparation, these two miracles. They're going to happen at the same moment. 12 years in the making. And it's going to happen today. Isn't that wonderful? Well, it encourages me anyway. Jairus, the woman, and the girl were all vulnerable. There's something raw and desperate in these two stories. The woman was all alone. The girl was surrounded by people in life and death. So there's a contrast as well. And there's a huge contrast between their two social situations and their two physical situations. But it doesn't matter. Jesus touches them both anyway and heals them. Jesus reduces his team to a minimum, verses 36 and 37. Because this is going to be tricky. Got to be careful what you do. I read somewhere that the British press will never leave a good deed unpunished. There's a sense in which Jesus is going to do a good deed, but it's tricky. The emotions are raw there, you know? And he's got to be careful. So he doesn't go in with his big team with him. Move aside, guys, the Messiah's here. He doesn't do that. He says, you guys stay here. Just takes a few of his friends, just a few of the disciples, said, we'll do this quietly, lads. And they go in and they slip into the room. And just, could you all just leave us here, please, with the parents, just to pray? And they said, don't be silly. They're all laughing at him. He says, just leave us. He plays it so low-key. There is none of the razzmatazz of a TV evangelist, is there? Yeah? It's just not there. You play it low-key. It's not upset people. It's not fight with people. It's not shove people out of the way. We'll just keep it low-key. Let's not raise the tension any further than it's raised already. And the girl is healed. You've got your Bibles open. You know the story. He gives her food. I just put together verses 34 and 43 here. Put them in one on the screen. Jesus says to the woman, go in peace. Jesus gives peace to the woman. And he gives a snack to the little girl. Give her something to eat. Peace in the heart to the woman. Feed a teenager or feed a girl about to be a teenager, you know? That's good psychology. That works at every level. And in chapter 6, verse 1, he slips quietly away. And Jesus left there, went to his hometown, accompanied by his disciples. Doesn't that drag it out, doesn't make a big scene, it's done, he moves on. There's another day to be done, more people to be ministered to. Let's not sentimentalize this too much, please, okay? The woman was still poor. She was still at the bottom of society. She's lost the money. She is still an abandoned peasant woman. Life is not going to be easy for her. She's healed, but don't think life's going to be a bed of roses from here on in. In first century Palestine, I can assure you she did not go on to become a millionaireess and appear on Dragon's Den. All right? Didn't happen. Don't over-sentimentalize it. She woke up the next day, she had to feed herself, look after herself. She was healed and everything, but life was going to be a struggle. Jairus' daughter still has to face the trials of growing up. She'll be a teenager at the next birthday. Lord, have mercy upon her. And her parents. She's still got to go through the slammed doors and the refusal to eat the meal and all the trials of growing up. Got to face marriage, children. And if she lives for another 40 years, when she's 50 or so, she's going to watch war sweep through the country. She may have to run as a refugee or lie low in Galilee and hope the Roman army led by Titus and Vespasian will pass by on their way to destroying Jerusalem and massacring the people. So, you know, just please don't, this is not the princess lived happily ever after story. It's not. This girl is going to go through a tough life. She's been touched by Jesus, she's been healed, but don't think that it's going to be easy tomorrow and the next year and the year after. Don't sentimentalize her, please. This is not a Disney fairy story where they all live happily ever after. They're going to have a tough life. It's not, I've healed you now, go and be happy. If only it were that simple. If only it were that simple. But life's more complicated than that. But it is a crucial moment. It is the moment when they could say, Jesus touched me. It's always an important memory in their life. Right through their trials to come, they know they've been touched by Jesus. I think that's a great prayer. As I was reading this, I was encouraged by a story from one of my favourite charities, Sporting Marvels. They work with children in the Rhondda and the neighbouring valleys. And a year five low-achieving student, with the help of the street pastors, or the encouragement of the street pastors, finished work by herself for the first time. And the street pastor said to her, "Well done. I'm proud of you." And the little girl said, "No one's ever said that to me before." Yeah. Isn't that a moment when that little girl was touched by Jesus? I think it was. To me, that's a Jesus moment. It's a Jesus moment. And there are times, you know, your prayers just reduce to that, "Jesus, touch me," as you know, I've been through a difficult time, still going through it. And I'm going to have, if I'm not down there being prayed for, they're going to drag me down there, so I will be. But at one point, I was lying there, and I had tubes and stuff, and I was feeling a bit miserable. I didn't know what to pray. And you know, I'd been thinking of this story. You know, my prayer was that moment. I was alone and just lying there. I couldn't really get up because I'd have to move with me. I just lay there in the bed, and I was nice and comfortable, and I'd been incredibly well treated by everybody. But I lay there, it was night, and I just lay there, and I said, "You know what, Jesus, I don't know what to pray, but my prayers is just touch me. Yeah, I think I just need a touch from the Messiah at the moment." And maybe that's you. Maybe that's you. Maybe like Jairus, you've known him for a long time, but there's somebody so breaking your heart that you want to come in and just pray with the team for Jesus to reach out and touch that person you love. That's a wonderful prayer. Don't hesitate to do it. Maybe, like the woman in our story, you're the one who needs the physical touch. And you just say, "You know, Jesus, just reach out." Maybe you're so shy, or it's so embarrassing that you don't want to get out of your seat. You're going to stay there anonymously and ask for Jesus to touch you. You know, you can do that. That's fine. He can touch you where you are. We ask prayer team to pray before they come. And one of the prayer team sent me a little note. He said, "There may be someone here with the right foot that needs the touch of Jesus. If you've got your right foot that's causing you a problem, would you come to the front in the ministry time and tell the team, 'I'm the person with the right foot. Can you pray for Jesus to touch my right foot?'" That's fine. The team will so enjoy praying for you for that. You could be one of the doubters in the crowd. You know, there were people who were doubting all this. They were trying to make sense of Jesus. What's going on here? That's okay. You've got to make sense of Jesus somehow. Keep on trying to make sense of Jesus. Don't be one of the scoffers who say, "Oh, look at these people out there praying. Aren't they stupid?" We're not stupid. We know the power of Jesus. We know the power of Jesus. Don't be one of those. But if you want a touch from Jesus, just use this prayer time this morning for yourself or somebody else. Ask Jesus to maybe dry your tears with his sleeve. That's a nice prayer. That's a prayer worth praying. The team will be happily pray with you. You can lie on the floor, you can sit on the floor, you can sit on the chair, you can stand, we don't care. It doesn't matter. One of the team will just come alongside you and just ask if they can pray for you. They may just lay their hand on their shoulder. Don't be freaked out on your shoulder. Don't be freaked out about it. If you really don't want somebody to touch you, say, just don't touch me. That's fine. We understand that as well. We're relaxed about it. And as we're praying, the congregation is going to be singing. Owen is going to lead us. And if at the close of the service you want somebody to pray with you still, there will be people in the prayer and care corner. The prayer room is open now and will be open right through to the end of the service. If you want to go in there and pray, that's fine. It's there for you. There are prayer cards. The prayer diary is functioning again. 100 people will pray for your prayer request. If you're filling a prayer card in the porch, you put it in the box. You know, there's so much prayer going on, but at the heart of it, am I not right? It's Jesus. Just touch me. Is that your prayer this morning? I know it's mine. If the band would please join me on the platform, let's bow our heads and pray briefly. Father, as Owen continues to lead us, we just pray that the touch of Jesus might spill out through the crowds, through the people here gathered in Penracht, out over to the internet, people who are listening to this sermon, to cry out, just say, Jesus, just touch me. Or touch somebody I love this morning, because I have faith in you. Amen.